And right now, as we normally do on a Monday, it is time to be joined by Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. And you believe it's Thanksgiving already?
You know, I was as a kid and as an adult, I've been overweight most of my life on and off. And two favorite things I used to go to as a kid, and this sounds terrible. One is Thanksgiving, because we always had a huge Thanksgiving dinner. And other ones were when people died, going to these incredible food-laced events where people hung around. The adults all got drunk, and I just got fatter. So,
well, I wouldn't be. You know, there was a whole book written on funeral food.
But Thanksgiving? Oh, my
God. You know, every culture, community, family have different funeral rituals, and a lot of them involve food.
But Thanksgiving, I'm telling you, my grandmother and her sisters, I was the only one that would stay in the kitchen, and I'd be the taster, and then I'd come out and eat dinner.
Very nice. Well, I've been reminiscing myself, because I'm in charge, I shouldn't say as usual, but as in the last few years, in charge of cooking Thanksgiving dinner. I didn't used to, because that was my sister's holiday, and she and her then husband liked doing it. So, and also they had the kids and I didn't. So I had to schlep out to New Jersey after doing the radio program and getting through the parade traffic. And anyway, but I was reminiscing back further, because I discussing the menu with my nephew the other day. You know, the kids evolved very, very quickly. So I remember very recently they weren't allowed to have a lot of sweets, but apparently the parents have decided to give in, and dessert is the favorite course for his two little girls. So they always look forward to dessert. So I guess I started with dessert and realized that we always had, when I was a kid, my mother always had a table with a lot of dessert. When I first met Bob, he used to say my mother would put out a Viennese table, you know, just if you're coming over for coffee, there were like six desserts for three people. But that said, what were the desserts? We had pies. Of course, Thanksgiving sort of equals pies. And the pies came from a bakery that still exists on Atlantic Avenue in the East New York section of Brooklyn, which means the far east border of Brooklyn where it meets Queens. And it's called Mrs. Maxwell's. I have been to Mrs. Maxwell's within recent memory, and it's nothing at all like Mrs. Maxwell's. Maybe it's just Maxwell's now. Was in the old days. But then we got, well, at least what we considered great pumpkin pie, great coconut custard pie, and chocolate pudding pie.
Now,
chocolate cream pie.
I was going to say, because we used to have chocolate cream pie. So that's the same thing, okay.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's chocolate pudding in a pie shell with heaps of whipped cream on it.
Yep.
What could be bad? For my father, that was actually heaven. Those were two of his favorite foods, chocolate pudding and whipped cream. The other thing was Nestle Road pie. I don't know if anybody remembers Nestle Road pie anymore. I was with some 30-something guys last night, and they didn't know who Jack LaLanne was, so they're certainly not going to know what that, and they're very food conscious. They're not going to know Nestle Road pie. So, but Nestle Road pie, Nestle Road was named for a Count Nestle Road, and I forgot what he did. But a Nestle Road pudding is the classic. And a Nestle Road pudding has candy, is basically a Bavarian cream with candied fruits and chestnuts. Chestnuts are the key ingredient. But the Nestle Road pie of my youth was, and of New York, because it's just totally, you know, anybody who's over 50 probably remembers, has some memory of Nestle Road pie. It was everywhere. In fact, I could tell you the whole history, but it takes too long. But there is a really interesting New York history to Nestle Road pie. But it was basically a Bavarian cream with candied fruits. No chestnuts. The chestnuts, the key ingredient, chestnuts, disappeared somewhere along the line. And it was covered with, it was a big heap of stuff, of gelatinized custard, covered with chocolate curls. So what could be bad there either? Anyway, I'm not making Nestle Road, although I have to tell everybody there is a very good recipe for Nestle Road pie in my book, Arthur Schwartz's New York City Food. And it really took some time for me to develop it. And soon after my book was published, I read somewhere, like probably the New York Times, that there was a bakery in Brooklyn that was still on order making Nestle Road pie, but they're not doing it anymore, so I don't have to think about it. But I have wonderful recipes for the other pies. I have a great pudding. By the way, the pudding that I make is the pudding filling, the recipe for which is also in New York City Food, is the pudding that I use to fill and ice a blackout cake. The cake is not an original recipe, meaning from Ebinger's of yore, the bakery, but another chocolate cake, probably better than the Ebinger's was, to tell the truth. And, you know, our memories are funny. We think it was a divine cake, but I don't think it was as divine as this one is, having eaten plenty of the original. But it was always filled and iced with this thick pudding, and then coated with cake crumbs. But these days, most bakeries that make what they call a blackout cake are making a chocolate cake with maybe chocolate buttercream. Maybe they'll be putting in the middle, but the outside is all buttercream. In any case, that's the pudding I'm going to make. But then the meal itself. So buying a turkey is not as easy as it used to be, because it used to be you had a choice, a fresh turkey or a frozen turkey. And if you wanted a fresh turkey, you had to order it in advance. So pretty much everybody, bought a frozen turkey. And, you know, you can make a good turkey out of a frozen turkey. Remember that for every 5 pounds of turkey, you need one day of the frosting in the refrigerator, and that is the proper way to do it. So if you're making a 20-pound turkey, which is not unusual, you need at least 4 days. Yeah. So you got to take it out of the freezer on Sunday to have it ready on Thursday morning.
Is that something millennials understand?
I don't get the reference.
Oh, just that it takes 4 days to defrost a turkey.
What does that have to do with millennials? I know old ladies who don't know this.
Okay, it has to do with time frame. So you either have to get yourself a fresh killed turkey, or you have to just really focus on the fact.
Yes, but now there's a greater choice. So
yes,
I ordered my turkey from Whole Foods. I did research this. The prices at Whole Foods are half of what you find on reliable sources online. I have several sources I go to for meat and poultry online, and then they deliver it. One place will deliver it fresh, you know, overnight it, which costs, of course, and adds maybe $50 to the cost of the turkey. So in the end, and there's a really good Whole Foods supermarket where my nephew lives in Wynwood, Pennsylvania, which is a suburb of Philly. And so I ordered it from there. But I saw, because I went online to my local store and I went online there, it's the same choice no matter what Whole Foods you go to. They have their most basic turkey is an organic turkey. Then they have an organic turkey brined. In other words, you can have it pre-brined. There was also a kosher turkey. But I ended up ordering a heritage turkey, meaning some old breed.
Yep.
I think I made a mistake with this. I only ordered a 12 to 14-pound bird. Maybe I should try it today to change my order, because I've been reading up on heritage turkeys, so-called heritage turkeys. This means before they made the breast so big that turkeys cannot copulate.
Yeah,
naturally.
Yeah, we are lucky here because we have several sources for.
But Traconic Farms, we order a heritage bred turkey now for the past 5 years. It's expensive, but once you
how much is it?
Probably around $10 a pound.
Well, this is $2.99 a pound.
Wow.
Yeah.
At Whole Foods. $2.99, and you make a date to pick it up.
Yep. And
I have a date on Tuesday evening to pick it up.
Yeah, we have to pick ours up 3 days before Thanksgiving, and that's when
they set up a new. But there are small operations.
Yeah.
And I will say.
Anyway, so have you ever cooked one?
Oh,
yes.
God, yes. Well, this is my New York story. You know, my jaded New Yorkers, when they have gone on to have these, are like, oh, my gosh, that was just phenomenally. That is just phenomenally good. Phenomenally good.
Well, how did you cook it?
Marshall cooks.
I cooked it.
Way, like his grandmother used to.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what his normal grandmother way is.
Not deep fried.
Only I'm asking this because, let me just start with, do you brine or not brine?
I do not brine.
You do not brine?
No.
Do you keep it tented?
I keep
while
it.
While it's cooking until the end?
I keep it. I start it off, and about an hour in, I tent it. And then, yes, I keep it tented till the end.
Oh, so you start it off at what temperature?
I want to say 325, 350.
Uh-huh. I always set my oven for 350 because I usually, at least in the beginning, baste it frequently. And so every time you open up the oven door, you're letting out heat. So
he
in the
does
end,
it
it's probably more like 325.
Yeah, but that's why I leave it untented at first because I baste it for the first.
It's 350.
So you leave it untented and baste it for the first hour.
Yep.
And then you tent it, and does it brown even under the tent?
Oh, yes, it does. It browns beautifully.
Uh-huh. And is this bird moist?
Oh, God, yes.
Very moist. Yeah, and you know what I found? If you've never cooked a heritage,
maybe I should drive up and get one.
If you've never cooked a heritage turkey before, the drippings which are going to make make it much stronger, much more intense. Oh, it's not. I mean, it's unbelievable how much more intense.
It was so.
See, I don't usually care that much about the meat of the turkey, but I do want a good gravy.
Yes, this is intense.
You have to understand that when Marshall and I first met, he was the first person who fought me for the part of the turkey that I liked, like for the skin and for the fat and for the. So I mean, like he actually thought that he was entire.
All right, so I'm hoping that my Whole Foods turkey is as good as that, and you've made me realize I should not brine. My nephew wants to brine, and I said, Brian, why? He says, well. You know, it makes it moister. I said, but all you're getting is salt water. Yeah. That's what's making it moister, salt water. And if you read a label on a poultry product that said 10% weight by moisture is water and salt,
and if you're cooking,
you wouldn't buy it.
If you're cooking a heritage turkey for I don't know how many people are going to be there.
Well, we have very few people. It's only going to be like six adults.
I would get like a 20-pound turkey.
See, I only ordered a 14-pound turkey.
Because the breast isn't as big. It isn't because it's not a fake breast.
No, I know it's not. And there's plenty of dark meat.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because most of us like dark meat.
Yeah, but
the kids will probably want breast, but the adults will want dark meat. All right, I'm going to call today and see if I can change it. But you know, I never feel like, even though turkey is a great centerpiece. it's never
stuffing.
Really the
stuffing.
Star of a Thanksgiving dinner, even though, you know, we give it top billing. So I was thinking, you know, what kids have to have vegetables. These kids do eat vegetables. My nephew requested roasted Brussels sprouts, so I will do that. And I'm thinking, and I'm going to make broccoli, too, because the kids love broccoli, so that'll assure them at least of one vegetable that they'll eat. And I thought on the side, not baked with it or served with it, but on the side, I might have a little cheese sauce because they're crazy for cheese. And they'll eat more things if it has cheese on it.
Right.
And then I want to make for myself and the other adults, I think the kids will eat this too, string beans, in, we would say in Italian, in fricassea, which means with an egg and lemon sauce. Mm. And what's a beauty about this is you cook the string beans ahead. I boil mine or steam mine. I like them fully tender, so I would cook them, for, depending on the size of the string beans, 7 or 8 minutes. And then you can refresh them to stop the cooking if you don't really want them to be super tender, which we do, actually. You can run them under the cold water and just put them aside until the last minute. And at the last minute, put them in a skillet with a big lump of butter and saute them until they're heated through. And then on the side, while that's happening, beat an egg. Well, it depends on how much you're making. Let's say for every egg, you want the juice of a half a lemon or a little more, and you beat that together. Take the beans off the heat, stir in the egg and lemon, and it should thicken up. We hope it's not going to scramble. We hope it's just going to thicken up and make a coating on the string beans. It's delicious. You can add to that by maybe making some sauté onion for just like three minutes because you want them a little crisp tender, and then add the string beans and reheat the string beans. So I think I'm going to do that. Then I'm thinking, I don't know, I made a disparaging remark about the candied sweet potatoes or yams at a famous soul food restaurant in New Orleans, and I want to take it back. Willie Mays Scotch House. You don't go there. Let me just say, even though I'm going to take it back, you don't go there for candied sweet potatoes. You go there for the sensational fried chicken. And then you get two sides. So, I don't know, take mac and cheese or something else, or greens. You know, they have good cooked greens. Anyway, the sweet potatoes were just sliced potatoes with what I called syrup. You know, like brown sugar syrup on top. That's not the way my mother made them. My mother made them, they were really candied. They would be boiled, halved, and tossed with butter and brown sugar, and then put on a baking sheet and baked in the oven until they really got caramelized. And boy, were those good. I haven't had them in years.
Those are candied yams, right?
Candied yams.
Yeah.
So I went to look up, you know, so that's what I wanted when I went to Willie Mays, and that's not what I got. But when I went to look at recipes, and I have now looked at a dozen at least in different southern cookbooks and general American cookbooks, and pretty much that's candied yams, the sliced potatoes with brown sugar and butter syrup over them.
Oh.
Maybe somebody adds a little pineapple juice.
Yes, my grandmother used to eat it. And she would finish it off with circles of pineapples.
Ugh. You know, you guys are making me ill.
Well, the thing
is
that
so sweet.
Somehow,
it is like making my
I think, and then
flesh.
I have to look this up, because I have cookbooks dating back to the early part of the 20th century, and I can see if it was there, but I don't think some of these things existed until the 1950s. And
when you could get dull sliced pineapple.
like the pineapple thing, right.
The
other one was the combination of sweet potatoes and marshmallows.
Yep, absolutely.
And, unfortunately, that is the tradition set by my mother in the 1950s that my sister continued. So her children, now adults, were brought up on this, which I think is pretty horrible, sweetened mix, whipped sweet potatoes with marshmallows on top. And I know that Brian, my nephew, who is very adult, eats it only because of the marshmallows.
And this is just hilarious because
I noticed this summer when he was making s'mores with his girls that he really loved the marshmallow part.
Well, you know what's funny, Arthur, what you're talking, my grandmother and her three sisters would each cook things, different things. So we had a Thanksgiving dinner that had all this plus baked apples plus it was like I said, as a kid I had died and gone to heaven.
Well, I mean, Thanksgiving is a fat boy's heaven.
Oh boy.
So I mean, there's nothing wrong with making too much food on Thanksgiving, and of course since we're all going, our family's all going to be together and then sleeping over, we need enough food for the next day, too, because I'm not cooking. I'll tell you that.
Oh, it was always true.
Anyway, so besides candied sweet potatoes, what would Thanksgiving be without stuffing?
Right.
Now, I'm not stuffing the heritage turkey.
No.
My stuffing is bread cubes. It's very basic. I saute a lot of onions and a lot of celery, probably more than most recipes call for. So let's say, I don't know, I even how to measure this, but let's say at least two medium-ish onions and four ribs of celery, and saute them in butter And then I add sage to this mixture of onion and celery. That's when I add the sage. And it's not fresh sage. I have now have the habit for the last number of years of drying. Oh, cause, you know why? Because I had the herb garden. That's how it started. So I would harvest sage before the first frost, which is about last week, and or down here anyway, and let it dry. So I had my own dried sage. Nowadays I buy a bunch of sage and I let it dry. And I like looking at it hanging in the kitchen while it's drying. So I crumble, rub, whatever you want to call it, the sage into little bits, and I add it to the butter, onion, celery, and really that's all you need. But that you can go from there. Like if you want sausage stuffing, saute some crumbled sausage, whichever kind you like, American, which already has sage in it, or Italian. Chestnuts, they have to be cooked first and then cut into little pieces. You can chop them, but it gets messy. I don't know. My nephews asked me to go look at Melissa Clark's recipe in the Times. She did the whole Thanksgiving thing.
For stuffing?
And I did. And it's basically the same stuffing I make, except with brioche. Instead of what I use these days is croutons made by Bread Alone, which is a bakery that's very well distributed in supermarkets, at least in New York City, but I think outside the city as well. Bread Alone makes very good bread. I buy it for bread's sake. And a couple of years ago, I discovered that they also take that same bread, actually a mix of their different whole grain breads, and make croutons for Thanksgiving stuffing. So I buy that. You know, I also sometimes have the time, I make my own croutons. But which is no big deal. You cut the bread into squares, slice bread, cut it into squares. Don't take the crusts off, and throw it in the oven. I would say at 325 until they dry out and crisp up. That's it. And you have to toss them around a few times. And you know, we also have our fans of mashed potatoes or potatoes in some way. Brian used to make this gratin of potatoes, but it's a real project. So I told him, don't bother, and I'll just make mashed potatoes. So that's our menu. What else do we have here?
I don't know. Are you making garlic anchovy turkey? Ask your nephew.
No.
That was By the way, that was the centerpiece of Melissa Clark's Thanksgiving.
Oh, you know, garlic anchovy turkey?
Garlic anchovy
turkey.
You
know, I said, I looked
brioche
at all this,
stuffing.
And I said, you know, Brian,
come on, guys.
I want you.
I'm sorry.
I want to make this Thanksgiving menu that I always had when I was before your sister took over.
The first time,
he said, "Oh, isn't that boring?" I said, "No, we do it once a year. What's boring about once a year?"
Plus, for kids, it sets a nice tradition. You got to do it. I will never forget.
If I had my druthers, Jill, we would be having, as Calvin Trillin once suggested, we would have spaghetti carbonara.
Why not? That's a good night.
Why not? Is because my niece has rejected anything but traditional food. I think she's right, by the way. I think the kids should, you know, have a center here and not be doing something,
in my view,
that the jaded adults want.
It's in funny. My view, you start with the tradition. It's just like cubism. I always go this, you know, for people who come in and say, oh, my 5-year-old could draw like Picasso. It's like, yeah, no. You know, first you are a draftsman, and you know your craft. First you have the tradition.
Then you go crazy. The kids are only going to care about dessert.
Yep, okay.
You know the worst thing that happened the first year I brought the turkey down to Jill's family? The gravy was just magnificent. Best because it was a heritage. And someone came up and said, oh, it needs this, and put it in it.
It was just
totally
appalling.
Ruined the gravy.
This was the same person who thought that Cornish game hen stuffed with raisins was a perfectly good replacement for a turkey.
I was so mad and so upset that my gravy was ruined.
But by the way, that wasn't heritage.
I wouldn't mind a good Cornish game hen. I think, in fact, I'm wrong about this, but why do I keep thinking that there was a Martha Stewart segment or something?
It might have
where
been.
she had a, everybody had their own little bird in front of them. And
yeah, it's so adorable.
It had to be a Cornish game hen. But you know, it's very hard to find.
Plus, it's very hard
Cornish game hen these days.
It's also really hard to eat. I mean, you could just have ortolan.
Why is it hard to eat?
If you are going for Thanksgiving, and if you are a traditionalist, as I am, sorry, everybody. When someone presents you happily with a Cornish game hen,
yeah,
my first response is not, oh, great, thank you, how creative. Mine is, where's the turkey? Sorry.
Well, I wouldn't say that.
I didn't say it out loud.
They provided me with a knife and fork and all these wonderful other things to eat, so I'm going to be happy because I like Cornish game hen. In fact, and this is a silly craving, but I lately have been craving game birds, but I'm not sure where you can go to get a good game bird.
We'll call after the show.
That.
Okay.
Yeah, I like game birds. But anyway, no, I think it's a sort of a cute idea, but it's very hard to find these things. And then speaking of Cornish game hens, because I have looked for, you can buy, I saw them in Costco, but they're frozen and I don't know.
Hey,
maybe I should try them.
They defrost faster.
Well, that's true, but there's always things that, nothing improves in the freezer, not even ice cream. So, in any case, the Cornish game, oh, yeah. So I'm, in my reminiscences, looking back at recipes that I have used for Thanksgiving, or at least written about for Thanksgiving, I just lost my track.
It's all right. While you're finding your track, I will say that a Cornish game hen is basically a little veal chicken. It's not
so
under 2 pounds.
So the thing is, now I'm back on track here. I don't know what year the cutoff was, but I'm thinking it's sometime in the mid '80s. You could no longer buy what I always bought as a broiler fryer chicken, or a pullet. My grandmother would call it a pullet, which was a young chicken. Weighing about 2.5 pounds. Nowadays, if you want a small chicken like that, you have to buy what they call a Cornish game hen. Because Cornish game hens are now bigger than they used to be. They used to be like 1.5 pounds, and now they're more like 2 pounds.
Well,
the
industrial production, we're going to run out of time, but the industrial production has, you know, ramped up. So they're younger,
that's
the same bigger,
with turkeys,
younger.
You know, right. As I said, the breast is so big now they can't copulate naturally.
Right. Huh. What do we do?
So it's heritage turkey for us, and we still have another a week ahead of us.
Yes,
so
we do.
If I think of any other Thanksgiving bits, there's always next Monday.
Very yummy. All right.
Or next Wednesday.
Yes, that too. The heritage. Don't forget that garlic anchovy turkey there.
No, I'm trying to forget.
I'm trying to get that mental taste out of my mouth.
Although I do in the middle of the year make. Braised
sure.
turkey.
Why not?
And I make it with, I do make it with rosemary and garlic, not anchovy.
Yeah, it's delicious.
That's not Thanksgiving turkey.
Correct. No. All right. All right. Almost Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too. Well, we have a week yet.
Yeah.
Have a great week.
Take care, Arthur.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio and the Robin Hood Radio Network.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton. Flawless catering and event planning, hathawayyoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.